Peace, party people. Welcome back to episode 125 of Where My Killer Tape At. I'm going to finally give everybody, the things that I learned from my fast under Supernova Slam and Queen of Fools' book, Man, Heal Thyself. I know I was supposed to do it on video, but I wanted to do it for the podcast. I do give you a book review, Gabby Rivera's Julia Takes a Breath, and I talk a little bit about Cosby. Word, check it out. Killer Tape At, B. For this episode of Where My Killer Tape At, I am sipping on Flor de Caña Número 7. It's a rum that they make in Central America. Shout out to my Uncle Polo for hooking a brother up. Word. The last couple of weeks, there's been this narrative, right? There's this discussion. I don't even want to say it's a discussion because I kind of feel like if one group is lying, you know what I mean, then it's not really a discussion. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I run around and I tell people that the earth is flat, that's not a discussion, man. You know, it isn't because you're telling a lie. So anyway, you have people saying, you know, companies, and you have some politicians saying that people don't want to go back to work, right? And that people prefer to collect unemployment with that federal kickback, which is like an extra $300 a month, which in some states right now, as we speak, they're ending that program. But people are saying they'd rather, you know, these politicians and these companies are saying people would rather stay at home and they would rather collect all this quote unquote money and, you know, the stimulus packages, right? Or the stimmies, right? Which, you know, it's funny because it's a narrative that people are using that is completely unfounded, right? Like, there's no proof that people don't want to go back to work, meaning that they're lazy. That's what they're really saying, that they're lazy. It's wild to me that during the pandemic, we learned that a lot of people, particularly service workers, were being severely underpaid. We were learning that some nurses, some nursing positions were severely underpaid, right? Some, you know, fast food workers, etc. Like, don't get me wrong. A lot of people have been saying that for years, that this group of people, when it comes to the service industry, right, the hospitality industry, they've always been underpaid. We know that to be true. We've always known that. And there were some sectors we didn't know about. Well, some people did, but most people did not know. The mainstream did not know. So during the pandemic, we learned this, right? Like, oh, these people are not getting paid enough, right? But somehow that story has been erased. And now they're saying that these people don't want to go back to work. First of all, it's a pandemic. A lot of these frontline workers died, whether they were nurses, whether they were fast food workers, a lot of them were dying. And there's even stories of people who caught COVID, right? And were told that they should not return to work and they weren't paid for their time off. They weren't giving sick leave because a lot of these companies don't provide sick leave for them, right? So again, with frontline workers, it's a shitty job. You know what I mean? They get paid peanuts. They deal with horrible customers, terrible management who cuts their hours. I can go on and on. And if you worked in the fast food, and if you worked in the restaurant industry, if you work in the frontline industry, anything in hospitality, anybody there will tell you the shit suck. You know what I mean? Across, for several reasons, right? And again, everyone should be paid a living wage. Everyone deserves a living wage, right? No matter what you do, right? Because these jobs are essential, right? We need people to cook the food. We need people to clean the hotels. These jobs need to be filled, but they should be paid a living wage, right? You shouldn't be having to work two jobs and collecting food stamps to survive. You know what I'm saying? So again, a lot of these people died because of the pandemic. So there were people who were going to work under dangerous conditions because some of these companies weren't providing, you know, PPE, gloves, et cetera, et cetera. They just weren't providing it. So why would I go to work for someone who doesn't give a fuck about me, right? And that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about these people are too lazy. They don't want to go back to work. They just rather sit home and take care of that. And some people, right? They got to take care of their kids. Their kids are in school at the house, and they need help. I know a lot of my students need help, right? So it's kind of like, you know, you hear this narrative, and we know it not to be true, right? The key is to pay people a living wage. And what's happening? Some companies, very few, have decided to increase their wages and do signing bonuses, right? And what happened when they did that? People started coming back to work, right? And that's proof. That right there is proof enough. Before we even go do this, even though people have done the studies, right? There's even books about it where people went undercover as a frontline worker, quote unquote, and they learned how fucking terrible these wages are and the conditions that they work under, right? So we got to be real careful with these quote unquote narratives, because what's happening is when we go debate them, we're starting to debate the debate from, then maybe we should take away unemployment, right? Maybe we should do XYZ instead of saying, you know, increase the wage to a living wage, depending on what part of the country you live in, pay them, you know, give them benefits and give them sick leave and give them paid time off. Like, that's the discussion we should be having. That's what we need to be starting that discussion from that point on. So be careful about that word. Police are also saying that crime has increased, and I want to talk about that, because we know that in the last couple of years, you know, crime continues to drop. You know, you're actually going to very lows. You know, like, we're seeing lows that we haven't seen in pretty much a very long time, like decades ago, right? And let me just say this: in the 70s and 80s, crime was at an all-time high, like historic levels, right? So, and it's been decreasing slowly ever since. Even in the cities that have high rates of homicides, we're not seeing the levels from back to 70s, 80s, and actually the early 90s. So, and I'm not a stat guy. I'm a historian, right? I'm going to let y'all know that up front. But anyway, the police are running around saying, and politicians as well, that there's been an increase in crimes. And I want to be clear, because, again, that's very dangerous narrative, right? Because now people are saying, you know, politicians are running around saying, hey, we need to be tough on crime. You know, we heard the same stories before, right? We actually need to put more money into the police. You know, we saw that happen in New York, where they're saying they need to, you know, hire more police and put more police on the streets, and in other cities as well. And here's the thing with that. The thing with that is, it's not that there's been an increase in crime, because when you do the numbers, right, crimes have returned to pre-COVID levels, but they're still low. Like, they haven't gone past how crime was in 2019, right? The numbers mean within those months in the summer, right? So, and I hate to use this term, but there's like a return to normalcy, right? That's what we're seeing across the board with everything, right? So the best analogy I could give you is Walmart can say, we're seeing an increase in customers visiting our stores. Duh. You are going to see that, right? But it's not technically an increase. It's a return to pre-COVID levels, right? And that being said, if you want to go there, again, crime is still lower than it was pre-COVID levels, right? So, again, there hasn't been an increase. It's just been kind of like a return to how it was before COVID was around, right? And I know, for example, burglaries. Like, we know that burglaries took a sharp drop, right? Why is that? I mean, excuse me, burglaries where they entered into the home, right? Because there's different kind of burglaries. The reason why break-ins dropped down is because more people were staying at home. Because we know that people that break into homes, they don't usually do it. Most of the time they don't. And I know people who used to do this when I was young. They don't do it when you're occupying the home. They usually wait until the occupants leave the house, and then they break in and steal what they're going to steal, right? So of course that dropped down. And then it returned back to its pre-COVID numbers, because now everybody's returning to work. Everybody's going out now, right? Most people are, right? So I think it's dangerous, you know, and the wording, increased levels of crime. Again, throughout the country, most places, crime continues to decrease, even to pre-COVID levels, right? So, again, police are using it. Some politicians are using it because, you know, that tough on crime stance, it gets a lot of conservative votes. So we got to be careful with that, man. And again, the reason why I want to bring that up is because when we come to debate that narrative at the table, we're coming from the argument that, you know, crime is increasing and we got to move from there. No, we shouldn't say that. We should be saying we don't need that much police. If anything, we need to defund the police, remove some funds from them, lower the police force, stop arming them with military grade weapons. That's what we need to be starting from. Word. So me and a group of brothers online got together and started reading Man Heal Thyself by the mighty Queen of Fua. You know, I talk about her all the time. And Supernova Slam. I need to talk about him more. We decided to read it together, a bunch of us. And while we were reading it, and the first couple of pages, they talk about these different level fasts, different kind of fasts they have. And it's like level 1, 2, and 3. We decided to do level 1 fast for the month of May. It asked us to do it for 21 days. We did it for the whole month. And level 1 fast meant no fast foods, no negativity, and no consumption of violence. It also meant no drinking alcohol and a couple of other things that I can't remember off the top. But I followed it to the letter. I already just eat chicken and turkey. They asked that you only eat chicken and turkey and to avoid the other foods, which I already do. So that's why I didn't count that. So we did it for the month of May. And I kind of want to talk about the results of it because a lot of people keep asking me, you know, how did you feel? What did you do? Et cetera, et cetera. What did you learn? And I kind of want to go over that in this podcast here. People wanted me to do it on video, but I wanted to have it on a podcast. That way I can share it with folks and they don't have to have like a video app or whatever. So before I go any further, I'm not doing a review of the book yet. I'm almost done with it. And I'm going to say this, that I want to kind of get in depth with it because I enjoyed the book because they give you a lot of different tips and recipes and stuff like that, different rituals that you can do. But there's a lot of spiritual stuff that I'm an atheist. I don't really get down like that. And I don't need like an explanation as to why I need to do it because the ancients did it. If it's good and it works for the body and it works for me and my health, then that's all I need. But I'm going to get into that later at a different podcast. Word. And let me just say this, there's different forms of fasting, and fasting is just doing without something, right? That's what it means to me. It doesn't mean that you like don't eat food or whatever. It could mean that, but it's you do it without certain things. So the negativity part was probably the hardest, because the hardest part for me was I had to stop reading comics because comic books, there's a lot of violence in comic books. So, and I had to stop watching like action movies and sci-fi movies that I enjoy watching, as y'all all know. So I had to stop watching. I couldn't watch none of that for the month of May. So the hardest part really was reading comics. I consume a lot of comic books. I'm always like, the first thing I do is I pick up a comic to read, whether I'm eating, whether I'm sitting down, and you know, when I'm at work, when I'm waiting in line, I'm always reading a comic or a trade paperback. So that was probably the toughest thing to do. And also, another tough thing to do was to stop cussing, because I was supposed to also stop cussing. Again, no negativity. So that was tough. And then I had to, like, stop talking about violence. What I mean by that is I realized that a lot of times we'll say stuff like, man, get out of here before I whip your ass. You know, so I had to learn how to say other things that meant get out of here. You know what I'm saying? So, like, those things were probably the toughest part for me. Everything else, like the food and everything, I've already do that. So it's kind of like, you know, it wasn't hard for me to give up. Drinking alcohol, even my alcohol consumption is very regimented. I only do it on the weekends. I don't do day drinking. I might do it on a special occasion. I watch how much I drink. I pace myself, et cetera, et cetera. So those things actually weren't hard for me. Just the part about the violence. And what I learned is that speaking for myself, I consume a lot of violence. Like, I realize that literally about 60% of the things that I watch or consume are violent. You know what I mean? And that was like, wow. And I don't want to sound like, super spooky, but it really does affect us. As much as we try to say that it doesn't, and I'm not saying that if you watch a little fight over here or fight over there, that is going to affect you. But if you're consistently consuming violence, I don't think that's a healthy thing to do. And that's something that I think we need to do more research on and really fully discuss. Because again, about 50 to 60% of what I consume, me speaking for myself, and I don't play video games, right, is violent. So that was probably what really struck me. I'm glad that once the fast was over, I'm like, I really paced myself when it comes to what I consume. And I'm proud of myself for that, because I thought I was going to get right back into what I was doing. I cuss less, so I think that's dope. And I wasn't trying to stop cussing. I actually enjoy cussing, as you can tell on the show. But, I've actually stopped. Not stopped, but I've lowered that. I really haven't cussed as much as I used to, which I think is a good thing, right? You're trying to get things out of the fast. But so far, those are the things that I got from it. And I want to add on to that. What I did learn about this fast is how it affects people around me. Ironically, before I started the fast, I was watching, I watched this one YouTube channel. I forgot the guy. His last name is Baron. And he does like different fasts. He does like different exercising techniques. He'll do them for like 30 days and then he'll do a review on it. And he did a sugar fast. Why can't I remember his name? And then during the sugar fast, he said that fast actually inconvenienced the people around him. And at first I was like, whatever. But I've done fasts before, but they weren't as extensive as this one. And what I realized is that, yes, my fasting did affect people around me. Like it actually inconvenienced them, right? So I'm gonna give you an example. Like at work, like I couldn't eat fast food. Every now and then at work, I'm usually the one that suggests where we go eat lunch at. And I usually suggest like really dope places. So my coworkers will usually suggest fast food. So if they suggest a fast food, I'll eat that fast food for that day as long as they have chicken. So that's, I'm gonna say once a week. So once a week, I might eat some fast food. Anyway, I noticed now that when it was their turn to do the fast food, I was like, nah, let's go eat here because I can't eat fast food. And usually where I want to eat at is a little bit more expensive than fast food places. So again, it affected my coworkers and their wallet. You know what I'm saying? So that's just one example. Me and my kids, we usually watch different things together. A lot of it is violent. There you go. So, and what I love about my children is that they won't watch something that they're watching with me by themselves. You know what I'm saying? Which I think is dope. So they had a hold out. So pretty much they were kind of like fasting a certain part of their month, like with me, and they didn't mean to do it. So it inconvenienced them, you know? So when he said that, I was like, whatever, but he's right. It does inconvenience other people. And I wasn't trying to do that. Like, I really wasn't trying to do that. Don't get me wrong. A lot of people I ran into was like, oh, you're doing that. I'm going to give you another example. I had a homie, a comrade that I haven't seen in decades, and he came to see me. Usually you go out and drink. We didn't, I got him some alcohol, but I didn't drink. So I'm not saying that we didn't have as much fun as we should have. We had a great time. But I know I would have been happier if I was a little bit drunk, right? So again, it inconveniences other people. But what I was trying to say earlier was that I think what was really dope was when people heard what I was doing, they were like, oh, I need to do something like that. And then now there are people that are doing different kinds of fasts based off of what I did. So not only did it inconvenience other people, it also kind of like positively influenced them because they were like, oh, wow, that's dope. I should do something like that. So I know like my homie right now, he's like not cussing for this month. And I think it's dope, right? So that's pretty much my review, what happened, how it affected me. And I hope, you all learned something from my experience. Word. Last month, and literally in one sitting, I read Gabby Rivera's Julia Takes a Breath. Now, I'm familiar with Gabby Rivera when she wrote for Marvel Comics and she wrote a dope series on Miss America Chavez, one of my favorite superheroes. Highly recommend that you pick that up. And it's a 2-volume trade paperback set. I think it was like 12 issues and they got canceled, but it was a really dope series, dope artwork, dope writing. Real like, Afro-Latinx if you're into that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was really dope. A lot of representation. Anyway, I was in the library and boom, I ran into this book and I said, yo, I like her stuff that I read in Marvel, so I'm going to read it. Highly enjoy it. Matter of fact, I have a LGBT club and I'm going to actually use this to read as a book that my club will do. So that being said, I highly recommend it for a book club, particularly high schoolers and young adults. The reason why I say that is because a lot of times the terminology that we use, you know, when we talk about trans, you know, lesbian, queer, we use that kind of terminology. A lot of it is very academic heavy, and it's very difficult for a lot of people to like really get into because of that. I'm not gonna lie, even me, I'm still like trying to figure stuff out. But I like how Gabby Rivera takes that terminology and she kind of teaches the reader about what they mean. So the main character, Juliet, is Afro-Latinx lesbian living in the Bronx. And she gets this internship to work for this super white feminist woman in, I want to say Portland, Oregon. So she flies out there, learns, you know, just learns a whole bunch of stuff, like overwhelmingly. She does it overwhelmingly because there's things she just doesn't get. And they throw a lot of terminology into it that she's like, I don't understand everything. So she's kind of like intimidated. In the process, she ends up going to visit her cousin in Florida, who's about that life. And she introduces her to a LGBT community in the hood. And she learns more terminology, but she learns it in a much easier sense. So in a way, the reader is almost like the protagonist, Juliet, where you're kind of learning all these things. You're learning how people interact and the kind of terms, how they identify themselves and how those identities intersect. So I think it was a dope, fun way because you end up really loving Juliet and you really end up hating some of the characters and loving some of the other ones, just like any good writer would do, right? But at the same time, while you're having that kind of fun and learning about all the drama, you're learning a lot of stuff. So I highly recommend it, especially for like parents and people that work with young people that don't get it. And sometimes for them, it's harder to get. So I highly recommend this book to read. Again, I would use it with high schoolers and young adults if I'm using it as a book club. But if you run into somebody who, you know, kind of is a little bit closed-minded, I would slide this book to them because, again, it helped me with a lot of the terminology that I wasn't familiar with. And it's still a dope story. So anything Gabby Rivera does, I'm going to actually definitely pick up. I hope this review helps out. Yes. So let's talk about Cosby. I think if anything, I am shocked that he was released. I really didn't see that coming. And I want to point out that because I know a lot of people are talking about, like, you know, the details of what happened and what the deal was. He never pleaded the fifth, though. And you know what I'm saying? Like, he never pleaded the fifth. And it's an official statement. Him saying in that deposition, which was never sealed, by the way, and you should read the deposition, it's actually very detailed, right? He admits to a lot of things in there. But one thing that was very incriminating, again, he didn't plead the fifth on it. Just the agreement was that the state of Pennsylvania could not prosecute him criminally for rape or attempted rape. You know, but that doesn't mean that the state of New York can't or the state of, you know, D.C. can't. You know what I'm saying? Like, and again, a deposition is an official document. He admitted to drugging women to rape them, right? He admitted that. He admitted that. He actually said that, right? So, and I know that with the situation with the woman that in that case, I know that was kind of like double jeopardy. And again, we can get into the Bill of Rights and all of that, but he admitted that he did these things, right? Again, I'm surprised that he was let loose because of a technicality, because that when especially to black people, black and brown people, that never happens. If anything, there are more people in jail because of technicalities, in prison because of the technicalities, than out. You know what I'm saying? It's very rare that I hear somebody say, oh, we're letting you out because of technicality. That's what you see in the movies, right? But he got the money, he got the lawyers, you know what I'm saying? So he could do that. I think what really tripped myself out about myself was that I forgot how many people kicked for him. There's a lot of people who believe that he's innocent. There's a lot of people who think that he was being railroaded, that it's a conspiracy, et cetera, et cetera. And I forgot about that because, you know, he's been in jail for a few years, kind of like been forgotten. You know what I mean? Even though he was still making news stories, he was kind of like forgotten. He was out of the general discussion. And I guess with the pandemic too, you know, that kind of like put everything in the back burner. So him coming out of this, and I know during the pandemic, a lot of jails and prisons were figuring out ways to lower their population because of COVID. So I don't think that's what that was about. I just think he just had the lawyers to do it. I'm just shocked that I forgot about that. So when people are coming out saying, yay, he's out, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. You know what I mean? Because, again, there are people that think that he's innocent. They think that those 50 or 60 women are lying. and so on and so forth. So I've been saying this for years, but I am going to do a piece on rape culture. I'm going to talk about that, how predators have been able to get away for so long and how they keep a group of people around them that kind of like promotes this image that they're good, wholesome people. We're going to talk about that because we just had something happen with Godal Giotto and Mestre Suasana, and I need to get into that. So we're going to talk about that. And we've been here, right? We've been here, whether it was African Mbata, Zulu Nation, or Bill Cosby, right? Where these people who we see as our heroes, people that we look up to, that had a positive influence in some of our lives, right? Some of it direct, some of it indirect, how they turn out to be monsters. So definitely, that's all I can say about Cosby now. I got so much more to say, but I wanted to keep it short. For this health segment, it's a part confession. So anyway, during my fast for the month of May, I took up journaling, and it was actually part of the book we were reading, Supernova Slam and Queen of Fools, Man Heal Thyself. They asked us to journal. Here's the wild part. Although I do a lot of writing, I don't journal, right? And it's funny because writing is, you kind of like write for a particular audience, even if you never publish it or whatever. So I've always written, even though writing has been therapeutic for me, and it actually helped me process a lot of emotions and a lot of thoughts that I had. I never really journaled. Every now and then I write down something that I dreamed about, but never really journaled. So I started journaling, and man, the reason why I'm confessing is because I tell a lot of people, a lot of my mentees, a lot of students that I work with, I always give them the advice that they should journal if they're going through something, and they do follow that advice. But I, being a hypocrite, was not following that advice. So now I journal, and I can't stress enough how like dope it's been for me, because it's really helped me. I mean, I've always been somebody who's thought and felt a lot and really processed my emotions just on a day-to-day basis. But this helped me do it a lot better. It helped me, you know, really flesh out how I feel. And there were times when I wrote stuff down that later on I was able to tell somebody how I felt about whatever I was going through, particularly if somebody did something to me or if they made me feel a particular way. So I know it all goes under mental health and emotional health. I highly recommend journaling. I really, really, really do. And there's a lot of cute little books you can use to journal too. But I enjoy it. I'm still doing it after the fasting, because I was supposed to do it while I fasted. I'm still doing it, and I'm going to continue to do it because I think it's just a good practice. So definitely highly recommend it. And if you want to talk about it, you know, let me know what's up. Word. Many shout outs are in order. First of all, shout out to my family, man. I love y'all. My siblings, my moms, my cousins. We had a great time in Florida. Man, yo, I miss y'all and love y'all. It was just such a dope event. We celebrated my mom's 70th born day. So it was just, man, it just feels good to be loved. You know, we all had a rough year. And it just was good to be with family out in the sun and the beach and just having a good time. It was just us, though. It was just us. It was just dope, man. Shout out to my extended family, Capoeira Dayton. Y'all know who you are. We back out here in these streets. And shout out to the Gem City Market for opening up their space for me to teach your kids Capoeira class. I haven't taught one in so long, you know what I mean? And it's just been dope. And shout out to the Circle Nerds. We're going to get back in there. And shout out to the Barrel House where I buy my beers, you know what I mean? Like, yo, I love y'all. And they're about to open it back up. We're going to do Wu-Tang Wednesday there. For real, for real. Love y'all. Thank you once again for listening to another episode of Where My Killer Tape At. I really appreciate it. As you can see in the show notes, I actually inserted a way you can support my podcast, you know, monetarily. It's not a lot. You can pick the tier that you want. You can pick 99 cents a month. I think it's like $4.99 a month. However you want to support, I really appreciate it. I'm not hurting anything like that. I just want to be able to pay for everything that I'm paying out of pocket for right now, such as maintaining the website and paying for my subscription. So if you could do that, I really appreciate it. Also, if you don't feel like doing that, you could also support me by purchasing my coffee mug, and the link will be in the show notes as well. I'm trying to sell at least 100 mugs this year, so help me reach my goal. If you want to talk about me on Twitter or on the gram, always use the hashtag Where My Killer Tape At, and you spell killer, K-I-L-L-A. If you want to book me, check out the website, omisbench.com, and that's omisbench.com. And you could book me if you want to want me to do panel discussions, or if you want to fly me out for workshops, capoeira, breaking, or whatever. You want me to discuss hip-hop culture, I got you. And if you want me to be on your podcast, you could always hit me up on my actual personal Twitter, DanTresOmi, D-A-N-T-R-E-S-O-M-I, or at the official Twitter page for the show. And that is Omis. This is Omis Podcast, O-M-I-S-P-O, you know, podcast. There you go. So please, I love y'all and thank y'all for all the support that y'all giving me. Word.